Welcome to Change Your Mind, an introduction. I'm Terry Mahaney, the creator of Change Your Mind, and I want to thank you for your interest in my program and for taking the time to listen to this tape. But I especially want to tell you how much I appreciate your willingness to try something new. I assume you're looking for new ways to improve yourself in your life, as I was when I developed the program. And it took hundreds of people like you to help develop this program with me. People who were willing to work with me and experiment with their own minds as I stumbled along learning about mental patterning and subliminals and writing scripts and what worked and what didn't and change things and rearrange them, and they would work with me over and over again to see what would work for them. My book is dedicated to those people, but this tape is dedicated to you. I think we're all working to achieve a better life in some way, and if I can help you make yours better, it makes my day. I love to see people get happier. So thanks for listening. And I hope there's something on this tape that speaks especially to you. If not, and if this program isn't for you, I wish you the very best of luck finding a way to get what you want for yourself in your life. On this tape, on side one, we'll discuss how the program got started and how it developed. Then we'll summarize the subliminal research, and we'll cover some of the interesting findings that I've found. We'll conclude with some examples and stories about people who've actually used the program. On side two, we'll talk about the Change Your Mind script formats and the differences in them and how they work, how you can use the Change Your Mind tapes, what you can expect when you use them, and I'll answer the questions I get asked the most often about the program. You can listen to the subjects on the tape in any order, so please feel comfortable going backwards and forwards, listening to some, turning the tape over. Find what interests you the most first. So let's start with how the program developed. You know, I never had a goal in life that said, write subliminal tapes for myself and others when you grow up, so this was not something I intended to do. But my life has certainly proven the statement that life is what happens while you're making other plans. Like most of the self-help or self-improvement programs around today, Change Your Mind developed as I was doing my own personal search. The seeds were planted in the early 70s. I was a single parent, struggling to make it, especially financially, and I was trying and sampling everything around to make my life better. I worked a lot with affirmations, and I got some tremendous, tremendous results with some, and I got dead zero results with others, and I was trying to figure out what made the difference. I got involved with the Association of Research and Enlightenment and spent a couple of years working with Edgar Cayce's material on health cures and diets and whatever, castor oil packs, dream analysis, mind is the builder, and that helped. I went on and tried everything I could find that seemed practical and made sense, and each thing I tried helped me a little, but nothing got me all the way across. The next major step came in the early 80s when, by coincidence, if you believe in coincidences, I ended up teaching. I was teaching business at a college, and I became very interested in learning theory and how students learned, and watching the students in the classroom to see which ones made it and which ones didn't, and I became very interested in trying to get all of them to make it. And while I was studying learning theory, I got a hold of the book Super Learning, and it just fascinated me. In that book, it talks about the research of a man named Georgi Lozanov, a Bulgarian physician and psychologist, and he developed a learning system called Suggestopedia or Suggestology in Europe, and we've named it Superlearning here in the United States. Lozanov found that people performing supernormal feats of memory had a relaxed state of body and a heightened state of mind. Their brain waves were at alpha, and their heartbeat was slowed. Now, when he studied these people, he found out that they had spent years and years developing whatever their particular talent was to do this, whether it was meditation or mind control or yoga or whatever. And he began to experiment to find a way to be able to induce this relaxed state for other people without their having to put in the years and years of study and discipline that the ones he studied had. What he found had to do with classical music, and you may have heard of this research. He began studying the Goldberg variations, and those are pieces of music by Johann Sebastian Bach that were done centuries ago. There was a gentleman named Count Kaiserling, and he had insomnia. So he commissioned Bach to compose some restful music specifically for him, which Bach did. Now, Bach didn't play the music for him. A man named Goldberg did. So Goldberg would sit in the Count's bedroom each evening and play this music, Bach's music, on the harpsichord. Well, night after night, he got pretty tired of playing the same piece, and so he'd, you know, sort of improvise a little and do a little variation here and a little variation there, so he wasn't doing the same thing over and over again, and it worked. And the Count began to sleep very well for the first time, and And for this success, he gave Bach a very large gift of gold, and these musical variations called the Goldberg Variations became famous. Well, Lazanoff went back and studied those Goldberg Variations at his laboratory, and he ran that music through his machines to find what patterns he could detect. And he found the arias, which begin and end the pieces, induce a meditative state. And he went on to study other Baroque composers, Vivaldi, Corelli, Handel, and he found that the slower sections, called the largo sections, of their music would do the same thing. So through analysis, Lazanoff showed that each of these sections of music had 60 beats to the minute, which has been identified as the heartbeat tempo, and that music tempo slowed the heartbeat and relaxed the body, but it left the mind completely alert. His next step was to study rhythm and learning. He presented material to students with this music running in the background, and he would change the intervals at which he presented the material, and then he would test them for how much they remembered of what he had given them. So he found if he gave it at 1 second intervals, which was very, very fast, his students would retain 20% of the material. Using 5 second intervals, the retention rate jumped to 30%, and when he went to 10 second intervals, the retention rate rose to 40%. In other words, if you wanted to learn something, study for a history test or Spanish or an FAA exam or your Morse code test or something, you could have this music running behind you and you could have someone presenting the material that you needed to learn in very short sentences to you every 10 seconds and you would retain 40% of the material having heard it one time. Now, when Americans took this system to use it over here, we found that the 8-second cadencing was the most effective in America. So I got fascinated with that, and I began to play with it in the classroom, and I began to play the music behind me and see how the students reacted. And then I asked students who were willing to if they would take the music home with them and study to that music and put in less time studying and then see what happened to their test scores. And I was getting some pretty dramatic results, which was exciting. So I had that piece locked in. Now, about the same time in my life, I was presenting a lot of workshops. As I said, I was teaching at the college, and I was also doing some self-development and some business development workshops. And one of the workshops I was presenting was called The Psychology of Winning by Dennis Waitley. And I was showing his videos and then presenting a workbook and exercises that went with it. Well, in this Psychology of Winning program, Dennis Waitley talked about the Lazanoff research and this Baroque music and the 60 beats to the minute. And he went on to say that with this music in the background, you could change your self-image. And I went, that's new. I had heard about it in terms of learning information, and I had used it that way, but I had never heard before that it would change your self-image. So I decided to try it. So my biggest issue at that time in my life was getting clear on what I really wanted to do and then managing my multiple roles and letting go of enough of my projects to delegate some of them, the typical businesswoman's dilemma. I booked more than I could get done and I wasn't willing to delegate enough to continue to stay effective. So I decided to try what Dennis Waitley said about the Lazanoff research for time management. So I made an audio tape for myself with statements like, I have written goals in all areas of my life. I am in control of my time in my life. I know when to delegate and when to do it myself. Just sentences like that. And I wrote out a whole page of those sentences. And then I repeated each sentence 3 times to this 8-second cadencing. And I put it on to listen to it. Well, I put it on one afternoon to listen to it, and I promptly fell asleep. And I thought, well, that didn't work. I'll listen to it tomorrow. So the next morning, I put it on in the morning about 10:30 so I wouldn't be tired. And as soon as that tape went on, bang, I went to sleep again. And I thought, well, this really isn't working. I'll give it one more chance. So the third day, I put it on and fell asleep again. And I threw the tape away. I thought I had wasted my time. It was about 10 days later that I realized that everything I had on that tape I had begun doing in my life. I had written goals, 20 years, 10 years, 5 years, 1 year. I had delegated 2 projects that had been hanging fire for over a year, and I was really, quote, getting my life together. And I went, whoa, what happened here? And so I took a year off to study subliminal research and see what was happening when I was asleep listening to these sounds and these sentences that wasn't happening when I was awake. Now, before going any further, I'd like to give you a sample of how it sounds with this music in the background, with sentences repeated three times to the 8-second sequencing. So I'm going to read just a few of the lines to you from the Your First Step tape out of the self-esteem section. I see myself realistically and objectively. I see myself realistically and objectively. I see myself realistically and objectively. I love and approve of myself without pleasing others. I love and approve of myself without pleasing others. I love and approve of myself without pleasing others. I love and accept all of my feelings as part of myself. I love and accept all of my feelings as part of myself. I love and accept all of my feelings as part of myself. I feel deep inner peace and grace with who I am. I feel deep inner peace and grace with who I am. I feel deep inner peace and grace with who I am. I am joyful with who I am and who I am becoming. I am joyful with who I am and who I am becoming. I am joyful with who I am and who I am becoming. I am a powerful, loving, creative person. I am a powerful, loving, creative person. I am a powerful, loving, creative person. That is how your Change Your Mind tapes will sound when you listen to them awake. Now let's talk a little bit about what happens when you listen to them asleep or subliminally. But first I'd like to give you a little background on the brain states. In 1924, a man named Hans Berger invented the EEG, the electroencephalograph. And that's the machine that graphically charts your brainwave patterns in cycles per second, called CPS. And they can show you the state of your brain at any given second. And there are four brainwave states. You may be familiar with them: beta, alpha, theta, and delta. So let's discuss each. The beta state is the highest cycles per second state. And this is the brainwave state of logical thought, analysis, action. You're in beta right now as you're listening to me talk because you are interpreting my words. When you're thinking, speaking, doing, when you're reading, those kinds of activities, you are in beta. And that's the state we stay in most of the waking day. The alpha state is the state just below that. And that is the relaxation brainwave state. You're in alpha when you're feeling soothed and calm, when you're relaxing, when you're daydreaming, meditating. You're in alpha just as you drift off to sleep at night and just as you awaken in the morning in that sort of twilight zone. Now, in alpha, you have rapid assimilation of facts with heightened memory, and that's what Lozanoff studied. It was the alpha state that those people could maintain themselves in while they were assimilating facts so rapidly that they remembered well. Another interesting thing about alpha is healing takes place in alpha. If you think about it, you get ill, you have the flu, what does your body tell you to do? Tells you rest, relax, go to sleep. It puts you in alpha or lower. And alpha is also the door to the subconscious. The state, quote, under, unquote, alpha is the theta state, and that's the deep meditation brainwave state and the deep reverie state and the called, what we call the REM state or the rapid eye movement state, the sleep state, the dream state. And then the last stage is delta. And delta is below 4 cycles per second. It indicates a very deep dreamless sleep. And we don't know much about it, but we're learning quite a bit. Now, what we're interested in for this program is the theta sleep or the REM sleep. And it's a very puzzling brain state right now. We're beginning to do a lot more research on it and learn more about it, but it's still puzzling to us. It's a little bit self-contradictory. When you are in the REM state, when you are dreaming, your heart rate and breathing are higher, which means you're sleeping lighter, but your muscles are more relaxed and it's hard to awaken you, which means you're sleeping deeper. So two different things are going on in there. As I said, we're doing more research and we're learning a lot more about it. But clearly we know that this brainwave state has very specific mental processing functions. We're just trying to figure out what they are. I happen to believe that theta is the bridge between the conscious and subconscious, and that it is the most powerful place to go in and change your messages. And the Change Your Mind program is designed to put those messages into your theta brainwave state. So now let's talk a little about the subliminal research. You know, I get asked all the time, do subliminals really work? Yes and no. Subliminal perception, which means that your brain is picking up messages whether or not you are consciously aware of it, is an absolute scientific fact. Yes. The brain picks up subliminal messages. Now, whether or not subliminal works depends on what the brain does with those messages. But all laboratory research has repeatedly demonstrated that subliminal messages affect your dreams, your memory, the way you talk, the way you respond emotionally, what motivates you, what you notice, and a lot of other things in your life. We know that that is absolute fact. And you know, subliminals aren't new. A lot of the research is new, but subliminals themselves aren't new. For centuries, they've been used in physical and emotional healing and education. You know, for instance, practitioners of ancient disciplines, teachers thousands of years ago, used something called a whispering technique when they wanted their students to memorize lessons. The teacher would stand behind other sounds, strong winds, ocean waves, musical instruments, or some sounds, and would whisper the lesson so the students couldn't consciously hear it. And that was the way they memorized their lessons in those days. And needless to say, our educational system is not using those techniques in these days. We are beginning to get more widespread acceptance of these kinds of things, however. We've seen biofeedback become very popular for pain, which is teaching people to go to the alpha state. We've seen hypnosis come into widespread usage for physical pain, for emotional healing. We're beginning to see some physicians pay attention to the research so that in the operating rooms in some hospitals now in America, they play the super learning music in the background and they give healing messages instead of talking about their golf game next Wednesday while they operate on you. And we've got some pretty dramatic responses with people healing faster who have this kind of operation environment provided for them. So we're coming more and more into acceptance. Now, in America, subliminals have become very big business. In 1987, retail sales of $50 million were reported for U.S.-produced subliminal audio tapes. And in 1989, one company alone grossed over $20 million in sales for subliminal tapes, audio tapes. Now, the research I'm going to talk about here does not deal with those audio tapes. So I'm going to go over the research and then we'll come back to the audio tapes. Most of the research done on subliminals is done with something called a tachistoscope, and it is visual, not audio. In other words, it's something you see, not something you hear. And a tachistoscope is a machine that flashes a quick, bright flash of light, and it has words embedded in it, and it flashes them very, very fast, so consciously you can't read the words. The best way to think about it is think about going in to have your eyes checked, and they put you down on that little machine, and they put a puff of light that goes poof to dilate your eye, if you've ever had that happen. Well, if they had embedded a message in that light, that would be a subliminal message via a tachistoscope type of a message conveyor. So that's how most of the research has been done. Now, when I started studying the research, I found most of it to be argumentative and technical and not very helpful, but a few men's research really stood out. Silverman, Dixon, Petzl, and Chevron, and I'm going to cover them briefly for you. Now, don't lose me here. I'm not going to get too technical. Norman Dixon, who's the noted expert in the field, and he wrote the book called Preconscious Processing, says that the controversy over subliminals within the psychological community is based on three things. Number one, the fear of the existence of an unconscious. which I take for granted. Number two, the threat to personal liberty that subliminal programming implies, and I think that all of us are conscious of that. Could people really be programming us without our knowing it and in ways we don't agree with? And number three, confusion over the words and the way they're used in the research. And I agree completely with those, and especially with number three, the confusion over the words. For research purposes, the word subliminal means sublimen, or below the limen. But the limen is a statistical concept, and it is defined as a stimulus value which gives a response exactly half the time. In other words, if I was flashing a light in front of you with words embedded in it, and half the time you can read it, and half the time you can't, it is subliminal, below your limen. In everyday language, when we talk about subliminal, we really mean sub-threshold, below the threshold, which means I'm not aware of it. And we now have the word, of course, supraliminal, which means above the limen or above the threshold. So the tape you're listening to right now, me talking, you hearing me, is supraliminal and supra-threshold. You are aware you're listening to it, and you're taking in on a conscious level everything I'm saying. Now, if I had put another track under this tape of my voice saying things you couldn't hear, it would be a supraliminal and subliminal tape combined. I haven't done that, but that's what it would be called. So that's what the terminology is about. Now, one study has shown that perception can be altered with subliminal tapes, your emotional perceptions, the way you see things, the way you view them. But if you wanted to change performance, let's talk about learning a new sport, golfing or tennis or swimming, or let's say that you're taking Aikido or something, you cannot use a subliminal tape for that. That has to be supraliminal. The Change Your Mind program is not aimed at improving your golf game or anything like that. It deals with your emotions and your emotional body, and that's why listening to it subliminally is very important. Some additional research by Petzl shows that emotionally laden messages must be shown longer than neutral messages. Now remember, this is via tachistoscope. We don't have this research on audio tapes. So with the Change Your Mind program, I suggest that you listen at least 10 nights and perhaps longer. Most of the subliminal programs suggest 30 nights. If you are dealing with changing your emotions, it is appropriate to listen to the messages longer. Now, the most important research, in my opinion, that we have on subliminals is Dr. Lloyd Silverman's research, which is very intriguing to me. Dr. Lloyd Silverman wasn't really interested in subliminals. He was interested in psychology. And he was working with a schizophrenic population, and he wanted to prove or disprove some psychological theories, and he was simply using tachistoscope messages to prove or disprove these theories. And so he would flash messages on the wall, and schizophrenics would be seeing these messages subliminally, and then he would slow the tachistoscope down until they could see them supraliminally, and then he would gauge what happened, how they behaved differently if they got the message subliminally or supraliminally. And he found that he could increase or decrease their symptoms dramatically using different subliminal messages. And as he continued to work with this process, he eventually discovered one short five-word sentence that had universal effects when it was given subliminally. In other words, when he flashed this short five-word sentence up on the wall so fast that no one in the room could consciously read it, he got wonderful results. Everyone calmed down, was peaceful, and it was very, very positive for them. Now, when he slowed the tachistoscope down so the people could read the sentence, he got exactly the opposite effect. Subliminally, it worked positively. Supraliminally, it lost its effect. Now, this sentence became the subject of hundreds of subliminal research projects, and it has proven effective with weight loss, stop smoking, alcoholism treatment programs, academic achievement in many, many areas of life. And that sentence, that short five-word sentence, is, "Mommy and I are one." About this time, people usually ask me, how does that work? Well, we don't know. We just know it does work. Dr. Silverman believes that Mommy and I Are One is a symbiotic fantasy, or he calls it a fantasy of merging, or merging with the good mother of infancy. He says it's a way of our emotionally, quote, going back to the womb, unquote. Different people have different theories on why it works, and you can develop any theory you'd like to on why it works. The bottom line is, it works, and you will find that sentence on every Change Your Mind tape. Let me give you one example of a piece of research in which this was used. At Queens College, Dr. Kenneth Parker, an attorney and psychologist, offered extra credit to students who were taking his law class who would agree to participate in a study to see if subliminal messages would improve their academic performance. Well, of course, a number of students agreed to do that because it gave them extra credit. So 60 students signed up, and they agreed to receive subliminal programming 3 times a week just before class. So these students would be walking into the classroom, they would stop at a tachistoscope, they would get a message subliminally, they had no idea what the message was, and then they would go into class. And they did that 3 times a week before they went to class throughout the semester. At the end of the semester, he would see who got the best grades and who didn't. And this is what it looked like. Those students were divided into 3 groups. Group number 1 got the message, "Mommy and I are one." Group number 2 got the message, "The prof and I are one," and group number 3 got a neutral, non-related message to the classroom. At the end of the course, the grading went as follows. Group number 1, who got the message, "Mommy and I are one," got A's. Group number 2, who got the message, "The prof and I are one," got high B's. And group number 3, who got the neutral message, got low B's. After 4 weeks, group number 1 and group number 2 remembered more of what they had learned. Group number 3 with the neutral message was losing their information very rapidly. And he did this over and over and over with the same results. "Mommy and I are One" has been researched in many other settings with similar results. And so I really encourage you not to take that off of the tapes. As you know, these tapes are designed so you can forward to any sentence you don't like and erase it. That is one sentence I strongly ask you to leave on the tape. It is important. The research shows it will make a great difference for you. We don't know why, we don't know how, we just know that it works. Now, does it work? When does it work? When doesn't it work, these subliminal messages? What the research continues to show us is no two of us process things the same way. So you can use one of these tapes, and let's say 3 of you use exactly the same tape. 3 of you will probably get very different responses and results. We can't guarantee you anything, frankly, as to what will work, except these very few sentences that we have researched. I've worked for years with different people and tried to develop scripts that have universal and general appeal that will work for you, but unfortunately, I can't guarantee you that either. Let me tell you some stories about things that have worked and tell you how I know that they worked. I shared with you the way I started the system, working with time management and goal setting for myself. And when I told a few women friends about that, they decided they wanted to try it also. So they'd come by in the evenings and we'd write scripts. And when it worked for them, they would send other friends. And pretty soon I had total strangers coming to my house and they just kept sending people. And so I ended up with an office and a business of helping people write their own personalized, individualized subliminal tapes. So each person that walked in my door brought me a new issue or a new problem or something new to write about, and I had the opportunity to work with them and try to write it away. We'd write a script, the person would record it in their own voice, listen to it, and if they didn't get the results they wanted, they'd come back and we'd write another one. And we kept doing that until we could get them what they wanted. So over the years, working with hundreds of people, I got to refine these scripts to what could get you what you wanted faster. Again, there aren't any guarantees, but I can tell you what has worked for most people. I want to tell you a story about Roger First, who was one of the most significant first clients that I dealt with. Roger was a middle-aged man, a successful businessman, who came in because he wanted to stop hitting his head. He was a balding man, and he had these marks on his head, and he said he just uncontrollably bumped into things, and he felt like a bumbler, and he was being teased a lot. We did a self-hypnosis session with him, and we were able to find out that 7 years before, he had been in an automobile accident in which he went through the windshield. And when they took him to emergency and his wife came down to see him, she took one look at him, this man with this glass-encrusted head, and of course, blood all over him, and she was very frightened and did what a lot of us do in that case. She joked, and she said, "Oh, that's just like Roger to hit his head." Well, that acted as a subliminal programming message, evidently, because from that time forward, he had been compulsively hitting his head. So we wrote a script for him that he no longer hit his head. And as long as we were there, we had a couple of hours. We threw in stuff about his business improving and just all kinds of things that were also going on in his life. About 10 days later, Roger came back to see me and assured me that everything was fine and he had not hit his head since. But he still had these marks on top of his head. And I thought, oh my gosh, this tape has just taught him to lie because he still has these marks on his head. So I asked him about them. I said, Roger, if you haven't hit your head in the last 10 days, what are those marks? And he said, that's what I came by to talk to you about, Terry. I've just come from the doctor's office. And he tells me that these are fragments of glass, that I am floating glass out the top of my head that was left over from my automobile accident 7 years ago. And he said, I've been thinking about it and wondered if the tape had anything to do with it. We went back and took the copy of his script out and read it. And sure enough, on that tape, there was the sentence, my head is now completely healed. That absolutely shocked me, and it also got me in touch with the tremendous power of this way of programming the mind and getting messages into the mind for some very dramatic results. I worked with everything from a miracle like that to people like Gladys. I had a woman come in to me, and she was a housewife, and she was home all the time and bored, and she talked on the telephone all the time, and her friends resented it because she called and took their time, and her husband resented it, and she didn't get anything done, and that's all she wanted. She just wanted to take care of this. She'd bought a very expensive set of subliminal tapes and had tried them all, and it had only gotten worse. So we wrote her a simple little script. I talk on the telephone for the appropriate length of time. I talk on the telephone for the appropriate reasons. And I never heard from her again, so I didn't know if it worked or not. But about 3 weeks later, another woman came in and she said, I'm Gladys's best friend. And just overnight, the woman stopped wasting my time on the telephone. I couldn't believe it. And I asked her what had happened and she told me about this tape. And so I came in to work on my issue. What I learned from that is when we make the changes that automatically overnight, we don't see them ourselves, that very often we have to talk to our friends to find out what changes we've been going through. Another wonderful story. A young man came to me who had taken the FAA exam and flunked it, and he very much wanted to be an air traffic controller. So he brought the FAA booklet by, the test booklet by, and we wrote a script for him which took out test anxiety and also told him that he automatically saw the correct answers and he could spot flight patterns instantly and just those kinds of messages. He sat for that exam again and passed it, and he was invited down to Oklahoma City to the air traffic controller school. And he turned them down. And I asked him, what in the world happened? This was your dream. This was the career you wanted. Well, on his tape, we had put some lines about, I'm in the perfect career for me. I'm very happy in that career. It works for my highest good. Very general statements like that. And he had realized that he had chosen the FAA as a career because of his father's wishes. His father was a government employee and valued security, and this young man was trying to please his father. But what he truly wanted was to have a video studio, which he has subsequently set up and is doing very well in the video business, and I'm very pleased for him. I have had some interesting and spectacular experiences, of course, myself, and I want to share a couple of those with you. As a businesswoman, when I first started working with the tapes, I wanted to make more money, and I'm sure some of you can relate to that. And so I wrote a script about that, and at the end of the year, when I was doing my taxes, realized that I had doubled my income that year. I had made twice as much money as I had the year before, so the tape had really worked. However, by the time I finished doing my taxes, I realized that while my gross, the amount of money I had taken in, had doubled, my net, the amount of money I had kept, was less than it had been the year before. And that got me in touch with struggle issues. I had been programmed that life was a struggle and you had to work hard, and I was not allowing myself to do things easily. And so I came back and wrote a struggling script on that to release struggle, and you'll find that in my book. One other thing that happened to me with my tapes that was very, very significant was learning about the way the brain denies the process. And I'm going to talk about what you can expect from your tapes on side two, and we'll talk about denial. But this was a graphic example for me. I was very nervous about a deposition I had to give. I had never been involved in a lawsuit. I'd never been in a court or anything involved like that. And so I wrote a script for myself about this deposition. Now, I wanted to listen to that script at least 3 nights before I gave the deposition. So I recorded it over the weekend, and I was going to listen to it Sunday night, Monday night, and Tuesday night because the deposition was on Wednesday. I remember this very clearly. Monday, I was leaving town, and so I was simply going to take the tape with me. So I made it Sunday. Monday morning, I got up, went to the airport. I was on the airplane flying out to where I was going. And I thought I was just settling back in the airplane, and I was just dropping into sleep. That alpha state, the twilight zone we talked about, the brainwave state that's just before you drop off when you have heightened awareness. And when I was in alpha, I realized, I went, oh my gosh, I forgot my tape. I won't be able to listen to it. And I didn't listen to it last night. Now, part of my mind was saying the words, I didn't listen to my tape last night. And the other part of my brain was showing me a picture like a videotape running. And it showed me myself putting that tape on the night before, listening to the tape, rewinding the tape, and listening to it twice. And it was the most eerie graphic display to me of how the mind works when it goes into denial. One side of me said, yes, you've done it. And one side of me said, no, you haven't done it. And I began to understand the denial process and the change process. Another one of the early experiences I had that was very important to me was working with a college wrestling team. The coach came to me and wanted to know if I thought I could help him and his new team. It was their first year, and he was just putting the team together. And I said, well, I've never done anything like that, but we'll give it a try. So we wrote a script that combines self-esteem and wrestling. And that wrestling script is in my book, if anyone out there is a wrestler and interested. And so we took a number of their key players, and they listened to that tape, as did the coach last fall. That team, its first year in existence, took number 2 in the United States for a college team competition, and that coach won the Coach of the Year award. I don't know how much of that had to do with the tapes, but it was a pretty spectacular showing on their part. But what interested me so much about that is one of the wrestlers was absolutely performing splendidly, and he went right to the trials, right to the end, right to qualify to go back for the big national meet. And the coach said it was unbelievable to watch. He just laid down. He said the man just laid down, and he lost and didn't qualify and wasn't able to go. And that got me in touch with the difference between performance and the issues underlying performance, that I couldn't just write a script for someone that says I perform well until I went and played detective and found out what issues under not performing well were creating that situation. This young man, of course, turned out to have very low self-esteem. And when we worked with him in the coming 6 months, we were able to turn that around. But we had to go work with his self-esteem and his family issues before we could make him a successful wrestler. His wrestling technique was fantastic. What also interests me about that is since then, two mothers of high school sons who wrestled, have recorded that script. They took the script right out of the book, recorded in their voice, and then played it at night for their sons. And both of those young men took the state championship. It clearly showed me the difference in performance with support from the family and the difference in performance without support from the family, and where the tapes or the scripts have to start to fix something like that. And the stories go on and on by people and about people who have used this program to improve their lives in ways they wanted to. But none of the stories that I can tell about myself and the things I've seen with the tapes and how they've helped me, or about other people that I've worked with and how the tapes have helped them, none of those stories are as important as the stories that you will tell when you've been able to work with the tapes to get what you want out of life. You can work with these prepackaged tapes and try them to see if they help you. And if they do, let me please urge you to take the time and energy to make a tape for yourself. These are very powerful tapes, I think, but nothing is as powerful as the tape that you make for yourself, customized to your issues and recorded in your voice. When you take control and when you become a working partner with your own brain to create a tape for yourself in your words, I think that's the ultimate power. And no stories will be as important as the stories that you can tell about what you were able to do for yourself when you take control in that way. However you choose to use this program, my wish for you is that it makes your life better in ways you want it to be better. And now, on side 2, we're going to talk about what you can expect from the tapes and answer your questions.